Winning season returns at mybookie.ag, and it's time to get in on the action. First-time players can get started by doubling your first deposit, giving you the firepower, pa-boom, to add excitement to the games you love. College football odds boosts, NFL lock of the week season, and over $500,000 in contest prizes live on-site to make winning this season your best ever with MyBookie. With a historic 18-week schedule offering more action than ever before, you need a sportsbook casino that's reliable, and you won't find a better place than MyBookie. I know you're going to bet this season, so do the smart thing and sign up with MyBookie and use our promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first ever deposit matched dollar for dollar. That's extra money credited to your account instantly just for using promo code ZABE and making your first deposit today. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie, and when you win, get paid. This is the ZabeCast, from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. Here we go. All right, it's been a long time, but I'm glad to get him back in the pod. Our friend, Matt Miller, a man about film, joins us now. Deep in the throes of first-time parenthood. How's it going, buddy?
Going great. It's going great. If you had asked me 2 months ago, answer probably might have been a little bit different.
Okay. So how old is your youngest now?
He is 3 months right now.
3 months.
Yeah, youngest.
Every day a little something different, right?
It's amazing. They don't prepare you for how much they change. And that's really hard in the first week or two when, like, you hold the baby and you get it to, like, settle down and you're like, oh, mm-hmm. Perfect. Hold, he's going to like this forever. And then the next day, he's like, you absolute idiot. I hate this hold. I hate pacifier. Get off of me. I'm going to yell at you for the next 45 minutes. And you're like, oh, I'm terrible at this. I've made a grave mistake. And then you start getting comfortable and he starts getting a personality and smiling and laughing. And it's
good stuff.
He's really great. He's the absolute joy of my life.
That's great. That's good. So where do we begin? I want to start with you on a sports front before we get into some movies. And let's just talk about the Milwaukee Brewers and the season that they are having. Oh my God. What a year, huh?
It is a surreal time to be a Brewers fan. I feel like Josh and I talk about this a lot, where it's like we grew up where the Brewers were guaranteed last place, where just merely being on the Baseball Tonight wild card standings in like the final little notch, being like 12 games back and technically in the conversation, was like, what a victory that was. And now the Brewers are always in the conversation, and not only in the conversation, leading the conversation. If the Death Star didn't exist, the Brewers would be the conversation of this season. But unfortunately, there is the, you know, triple beamed Death Star out in Los Angeles that awaits us all and awaits right. The baseball.
Well, the other thing was, you guys used to always have to accept the very patronizing, obligatory all-star selection. Because the rules of baseball back in the 80s were, well, we're going to let everyone have at least one player. Every team's got to have one. It was truly the participation trophy era of MLB's All-Star Game. Do you remember who was typically your participation trophy player back in the day?
I think Richie Sexson was one.
Okay.
I want to say maybe there was a Lyle Overbay in there 1 year. Okay. I'm sure there was some middle relievers, the obligatory, your team sucks, we have no one good to choose from. How about this sixth, seventh innings eater guy that we can put in? I think Dan Kolb, obviously Derek Turnbow,
actually,
iconic.
In the early 80s, you guys had a lot. You had Cecil Cooper, Molly, Yount, Ben Ogilvy. You started to get the one and dones in the mid 80s. Jim Sundberg was a one and done as a catcher, or not one and done, but the obligatory all-star. Cooper and Molitor made it in 85. They were legit. Teddy Higuera,
Dan Plesac, Molitor and Plesac in 88, Plesac in 89.
Good years right now. These are still respectable Brewers years.
Then yeah, let me get the 90s the
millennium.
Years.
Yeah.
Like when like I could look at when the absolute death years were. Okay, here we go. Ricky Bonas, Kevin Seitzer, Greg Vaughn, Jeff Cirillo, Fernando Vina.
Oh man.
Now we're talking, right?
We haven't even gotten to the horrific early Miller Park years. Like, we still have to get there.
Okay, hold on. I'm just typing in two. I've got fumble fingers.
I'd have made an all-star game once, and he led the team in strikeouts in a historic.
All right, how about guys I've never heard of? Bob Wickman in 2000, right-handed pitcher.
Yeah.
Ben Sheets, a brief hot for a second decent player, super hyped coming out of, I believe, LSU.
Ben Sheets. Oh, was that his, was it 19 strikeout?
2001. Yeah.
Like, I think, like a one hitter away from the best pitch. I think he lost that game too because it was like him versus Schilling, I think. And Schilling pitched like it was something insane, like that classic turn of the millennium Brewers baseball.
In 02, you had Jose Hernandez at short and Richie Sexson at first. That was the year you hosted the All Star game, where the roof leaked during the home run derby because of a wicked rainstorm, and then the game ended in a tie, and poor Bud was sitting there with his hands up like, what do we do now? Because they ran out of pitchers. Disaster.
I think we'll never host another All-Star game again, probably, because of that. Because they just don't want to bring back the memories of that dreaded All-Star game ever again. And it was going so well. Yeah. That was Corey Hunter robbing Barry Bonds game.
All-Star Yeah. Jeff
it
Jenkins.
Was also so well.
Jeff Jenkins, Dan Kalb, Carlos Lee, Chris Capuano, Derek Turnbow, Francisco Cordero.
All right. We're in almost borderline competent Brewers baseball
and
era.
And then it picks up. Then the business picks up with Prince Fielder and J.J. Hardy and Ryan Braun, Corey Hart, Trevor Hoffman. So it got good after that. But it's been a phenomenal summer, and having Miz is an incredible ride every 5 or really 6 days now, because they're slow walking him to preserve his arm, obviously.
Yeah, that's fine. Slow walk him forever. I am more scared about the Miz than my newborn child. Like, every time he goes out there, I hold my breath. And I'm just like, when is it going to happen? When? And I don't want to put that evil out there, Ricky Bobby. But every time he goes out there, I'm just like, I'm waiting for the classic Milwaukee Brewers. Well, that's interesting. We've never seen a shoulder muscle shatter like that before.
And it makes sense because he is driving at 104 miles per hour and every day. And you say to yourself, eventually, come on.
Arms ain't supposed to do that. No. You remember photos of Randy Johnson, the Sports Illustrated photo section, and right. There would always be one photo of like a pitcher's arm, like Randy Johnson's arm, like backwards on his elbow, and it'd be like, that's not how a human body's supposed to work.
I want to say that I don't think Randy Johnson sat at and rolled at 101, 102, 103 out of the gate as a starter, that he was high 90s. Don't quote me on that, but I don't think we've never seen a starting pitcher who lives in the low hundreds, can ramp it up to 105, has a cutter that clocks in at 92, which is outrageous, and is a real pitcher. And he's not just a guy that has a hard time finding the plate.
Yeah.
That's what makes him so unique.
Or a reliever. Because there's been guys like, what was the...
Billy Wagner was a guy, and obviously Aroldis Chapman. Those guys can live at 101 for an inning, for three outs. But that's where Miz comes out piss hot and goes six innings, which is phenomenal. And when he struck out both Otani and Freeman with the bases loaded in a key game in that series last week, it was a pitcher's type of approach because he had been feeding Otani high heat for most of the day and then hit him with the low balls and the cutter. Like, okay, guess what? We're changing shit up. Whiff. God, it was great. So that said, what's your bar for the postseason for your beloved Brewers? What will at least you say, you know what? It sucks we didn't win the World Series, but it was still a phenomenal year that'll live warmly in my heart. Where is that exit ramp in the playoffs for you, Matt Miller?
It's so hard because there's the Dodgers in the air, and it's just really hard to not look at the season and be like, and at some point you're going to have to go up against that. You're going to have to. And listen, this past weekend's incredible. You know, they looked great. Right. They also like swept the Dodgers last season, I believe, too. And that didn't mean bupkis. You know, they got to the playoffs and the Dodgers had their fully operational battle machine and absolutely massacred the Brewers. And I think that's just in the head, in the back of all Brewers fans' head right now, where it's like, they look really good right now. They looked really good last year, too. And they looked like a double-A Biloxi Shuckers team against the Dodgers in the NLCS. And hopefully this year they look better. Hopefully they have a better approach. I know a lot of people are like, well, you have to go for the homers against that Dodgers pitching staff because you're not going to be able to, you know, link together hits. But that's Brewers baseball. And they stopped playing Brewers baseball in that NLCS. And I think it made them look even worse because this is not a power team. They're not designed to do that. And they tried to do that in the NLCS and they barely scored runs and they got laughed out of it. I would love for them, I think World Series would be a dream. I would lose my mind.
So making it, but losing it, heartbreaking as it would be, with the passage of time, would at least have you say, you know what? What a fucking year that was. That was fun.
I don't even think it would be heartbreaking. I think if they get to the NLCS and put up a really strong fight and get deep into a series. Give the Dodgers a series.
So go 6 or 7 games.
Yeah. I think they could pull a Packers and pull that thing where everyone's expectations are really low, and then they find a way to somehow get your hopes up and then crush them, because that has been the Packers' modus operandi for the last several seasons, where you're like, all right, I don't think this Packers team's the team. And then they're like, hey, we're up really big on the Niners. We're looking really good. Oh, no, we managed to blow it. Eh, look, we're up really big on the Bears. Oh, no, we managed to blow it. So the Brewers might pull one of those where, like, they're leading 3-0 in the bottom of the 8th against the Dodgers in Game 7, and they manage to give up, like, a, you know, game-winning grand slam to Páez or whatever, and we're all going to be like, how am I somehow leaving this great season disappointed after they got clobbered by the Dodgers? But
Andy Pages. I hate Andy Pages. Dick. That guy.
The whole team.
So I'm going to give you, as they said in the Simpsons movie, 3 unthinkable options. You ready? Here's your 3 unthinkable scenarios. You're going to lose. Let's just say you're going to lose. The Brewers are going to lose in the NLCS and fall short of the World Series. Which death is more painful?
Okay.
Losing, say, in 6 games to a wild card that filters through that is clearly not deserving, like the Padres. Let's say they slip through and catch you. Mm-hmm. Would it be losing to the Dodgers in 4 games again this year after it happened last year? Or would it be losing to the Cubs in 7 at AmFam with a ton of FIB license plates and Cubs jackasses infiltrating your building? Which is the most unthinkable option?
The third, obviously. Okay, the third is the rest are like sad, are a bummer, you know. Mm-hmm. But like if the Brewers get totally punted by the Dodgers, then I get to be like, okay, they were Alabama and we were James Madison. Okay, that's fine. If it's, you know, the wild card thing, I've had that wound before. I've felt that knife to the gut before several
Diamondbacks.
Times.
Yeah,
the Cubs beating us at home. Craig Counsell's Cubs beating us at home.
To go to the World Series.
Would be some real, I may have to walk into Lake Michigan, tell Remy I love him. You know, maybe baseball should never come back. Maybe the strike should happen because I'm going to need 2 seasons to get over this.
You're like, if that happens, you'll say to yourself, well, it's a good thing it's going to be a lockout, no World Series next year, because I don't think I'd be ready for baseball after this.
Yeah, it'd be a I'm going to need some extra time. I'm going to need to watch. Yeah, well, I don't know, literally.
This is the life we've chosen. That's the thing. As sports fans, you want a ticket to ride. You want to have the highest of highs, the thrill of thrills, that bonding, that feeling of community, of we're all on the same team. We wear the same colors and we high five each other. Yay, team. It's a drug. It's why sports is a $100 billion industry in this country every damn year. That drug has a downside. And we just showed you the downside of it.
And when you're a small market fan, not to be the pull out my small violin and woe is me, oh, my poor small market, but it's easy being a Dodgers fan or a Yankees fan or, you know, a Cubs fan, where it's like you are a guaranteed destination. You have the coffers. Every successful Brewers season feels like we cheated the system somehow. It always feels like we're getting one by the teller. We're getting one past the dealer in Vegas or something like that.
Right.
And so that's the thing with the draft pick, the Skubal trade, where it's like, I would have loved, it would have been great to get Tarik Skubal, but, you know, is it worth, like, the system?
Logan Henderson, no. Logan Henderson's outpitched him since the trade, and that may even
For now, you know.
Right.
Pitching really great in the regular season and pitching great in, you know.
Big stakes games. I know.
Against the best lineups in the league is a different thing.
I know. We'll see. I mean, chances are Skubal's going to shove against anyone and everyone in the playoffs, and it's going to piss all of us off because that's kind of what big game pitchers do. But we'll see about that. I just think that a Cubs game seven win at AmFam, and if that fucking lizard-eyed, foul-mouthed albino Pete Crow Armstrong goes off, which he's been doing this year, like, there's no living that down. That is wrist-slitting territory right there.
Dude hits like a game-winning hit. It's going to be a hard, hard night in Milwaukee. There's going to be alcohol.
I'd say there's going to be a lot of drinking, but then again, that's a Tuesday in Milwaukee, so it's kind of hard to differentiate. All right.
Maybe a little bit harder.
So let's pivot to something. You and I are not financial guys. You are a cinemaphile. I am a gadget knucklehead and a golf freak. But I know enough about financial stuff to be curious, interested, and to grasp basic concepts. I think you do as well. This shit happening with Mark Walter, who used to own the Lakers but had to sell them all of a sudden in a weekend because he's got the feds breathing down his neck. And the Dodgers may have to go too because he's got like $30 billion of exposure through some very shady insurance deals with these other companies he has that he's got to get done by December 31st. This whole thing with how the Dodgers went and spent, and it deferred all this money could be a house of cards that the sports world has never seen, Matt Miller. What are your thoughts on what's going on right now with this clown out there in LA?
I mean, I think it would be great if a lesson was learned here. And I don't tend to hold much value in rich people learning lessons these days.
No, they don't fucking learn lessons. They just keep moving. Right? It's bullshit.
So I have a hard time believing this is going to implode the way it could deliciously.
You're right. Usually nothing happens. But he did have to sell the Lakers, and now the Buss family is all suing each other, which is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, winning time season, I mean... Somewhere HBO and Adam McKay are just like nom, 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 please pass more.
Jeannie Buss is like, no, you can't sell the team. And her four brothers and sisters are like, yeah, bitch, you fired us when you took majority control. So guess what? Payback's a bitch.
It is a little delightful that somehow the Bucks traded Giannis for a bunch of dudes who I can't even name right now.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow the Celtics and the Lakers managed to outfuck up the Bucks this offseason. That, like, A team lost Giannis Antetokounmpo,
right,
and that's like the third biggest fuck up, and that's great. Right. I love seeing it. But
you know, Jeannie Buss is like, I can't lose the Lakers because if I do, I'm just a decent looking 60-year-old woman in L.A. with money, and that's nothing special about that. Her whole existence is being Jeannie Buss and the Lakers. Like, this is. For a rich, good-looking woman like her, this is their own particular hell being thrown into the ranks of, yeah, well, there's another one. A well-kept 60-year-old with money in L.A. Shocker. Keep it moving.
Everyone in L.A.
You can start a podcast. Should start a podcast telling the real stories of the Lakers. Oh, yeah? About all the championships you didn't win when you were running the fucking team? Okay, great. But back to Walter. So it's looking like, from what I've read, that this whole thing he was running with the Dodgers and their preferential cable deal and the insurance companies could be a giant scam. It's breathtaking. And, you know, this is going to lead to a lockout. Many people are saying now, Miller, we don't need a lockout. Look what's happening. This asshole is going to lose the Dodgers. He was cooking the books. He was doing things that are patently illegal. We really don't need a lockout or a salary cap. We just need the feds to do their job and to trust bust the Dodgers.
Yeah, that's going to happen. I definitely, yeah, if there's one thing that I think is going to happen, it's the federal government's going to step in and stop a big profitable business led by a big guy. That's definitely going to happen.
Listen to the skepticism. Listen to the sarcasm pouring through right now.
I'm just reading the tea leaves. I'm no news expert here, but I see what's happening. But I have to say, too, like, you... Maybe we do need a strike next year just because, like, the amount of comical deferred money that the Dodgers, that's honestly been the stuff that's pissed me off the most about the Dodgers. It's like, okay, LA's got insane money. That's a, you know, that's guaranteed.
Right.
It's the, we can sign Ohtani and just defer hyperbillion dollars down the road and it can be 2040's problem.
Yeah.
Feels like a massive loophole. And obviously the Dodgers are exploiting it because they have comical money to do so. And, you know, the owners right now see this moment. Clearly, they are feasting at this moment of the how much everyone is kind of fine with a salary cap. Not the players, obviously, but obviously this is the most the fans have been on the side of a salary cap for a long time. And you have the Dodgers there being the big, sexy example of, like, mm-hmm. Look at why. One. And even if this guy's house of cards totally implodes, it won't. But even if it does, you still have to stop the next Yankees owner from doing this kind of from the Mets. Well, and I know everyone's like, oh, well, money can't buy everything. Look at the Mets. At some point, it works, you know, at some point.
And it's not just that, money doesn't guarantee winning. When you overspend for players because you've got a bigger budget, it makes the players on the smaller market teams way more fucking expensive. Mm-hmm. And it makes those players unaffordable. Yeah. So it has trickle down and ripple on effects that distort things even further. So we'll see about that. I'm going to remember what you said there, that as much as I hope for good, bad things to happen to bad people, remind yourself about how little actually happens, how little justice, either karmic justice or real justice, ever actually gets dispensed in the world. And lower your expectations.
Listen, I'm a person who's watching the Paramount Warner Brothers studio thing and all these people being like, oh, you know, this is fine. We should definitely have a monopoly in, you know, Hollywood and TV, and have these two corporations meld into one, you know, Dodgers-y Death Star. And that's definitely fine and not going to be a problem whatsoever. Like, I know there's all the legal stuff going on around that. I don't imagine any of that's going to come to anything that's going to happen. So I am appropriately cynical, I think.
I think you are.
It's summertime, and at MyBookie, that can only mean one thing. It is winning season. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means free bets, super contests, Survivor, and more. And at MyBookie, winning season's all about your chance to win big. Bet NBA playoffs, NHL, Major League Baseball, UFC, golf, and then some. The craziest sports summer we've ever had. It's simple. Make your picks, win big, collect your cash. Invest in your sports intuition, people. Select from hundreds of futures bets. You can bet games in real time with MyBookie's live betting. Put that big old brain of yours to good use and use promo code ZABE, Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo, and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games that you bet. Thousands of cross-sport wagers, props, and parlays await. Sign up now and bet with the best and celebrate your victory. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie.
Okay, so the Field of Dreams game happened back again after a couple years off. It was on Netflix, which is, of course, another money grab. It got the lowest rating the game has ever had, like a 1.8.
Partly people were chomping at the bit for Phillies Twins.
Well, yeah, I mean, the teams were not great, but also MLB did a shit job of promoting it. I didn't know it was on us until literally the last second.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I've been unemployed, so I'm not paying as close attention to sports as maybe I was in the past. But shit, even I should be able to know, hey, that game is coming up. And, you know, people just have to punch out of their streaming service and punch into Netflix. And it's, you know, it's a bigger ask. But it's the larger
problem. Yeah. People don't go to Netflix to watch a live event. They're trying really hard to break that, obviously, with the UFC stuff and obviously with NFL. But those are big one-time events. And it's really hard for baseball to cultivate that kind of event in a 162-game season, especially when that big event is, you know, listen, a small market guy, you know, would love if the Brewers were playing in that game, but I would probably be the first one to say the ratings would be really bad for that game. And lo and behold, Twins-Phillies, not the sexiest game.
I think Netflix is like McDonald's. Everyone goes to McDonald's, but nobody goes there for dinner. You're not taking the family there for dinner. And you could, but nobody does. Netflix is there because it's there. And you can always punch it up and kill some time on a Tuesday night. I don't know if their sports strategy and their live event strategy is ever going to yield the kind of fruits that they think it will.
They're just desperately trying to become everything. They're trying to become the Walmart of streaming entertainment.
Or the Amazon of streaming.
Or the Amazon. Where, you know, now they've got podcasts on you know, Netflix, and they've got YouTube channels on Netflix, which really kind of makes the whole product, like when I'm searching for something now, it really makes the whole place feel a lot cheaper to be like scrolling by and being like, oh, the crap that I watch on YouTube, and a lot of people put a lot of good work on YouTube, but like, if I'm on Netflix, I kind of think I'm getting, you know, high grade stuff, and I'm not really hoping to see, you know, celebrity interviews from Bon Appetit or like, you know, Epicurious videos. That's what YouTube's for. It makes me nervous that Netflix is going to stop spending money on real entertainment, on movies, on TV shows, and they're start just being like, yeah, we'll just become TikTok. We'll just become a place for 10-minute
expensive, institutionalized TikTok.
Yeah. YouTube TV,
a corporate run version of a creator type platform like TikTok.
Yeah, TikTok famously, you know, not corporate.
No, well, okay, it is, it is, but much of the content on TikTok is organically user generated.
Yeah, I know. Yes. Yeah,
okay,
which is,
So as to the movie itself, by the way, I did love the fact that on the Field of Dreams outfield wall, there was not one but two different gambling companies represented.
Yeah,
FanDuel and DraftKings. Or BetMGM was one, and whatever. Wasn't MyBookie.com the official gambling partner of the ZabeCast. Make sure to gamble responsibly and make sure to use promo code ZABE. And they would never put their name on the outfield wall. They don't need to. Everyone knows MyBookie from ZABE.com. Okay, so the fact that the Field of Dreams game to honor the movie that honored Shoeless Joe Jackson and the Black Sox for their gambling scandal, having two gambling companies in the outfield wall, was there somebody afraid to speak up in the room at MLB to go, maybe we leave those off?
Pete Rose somewhere just like doing a drill bit in his grave. Just
Pete Rose is looking up from hell, giving the finger like this. Fuck you guys.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's the classic, you know, they'll sell anything now. Like, they don't care about how this stuff looks. Like, they have
not. No.
I'm coming off real hardcore. I swear, I have a new child. I have a lease on life. I'm filled with joy, but I do look at, you know, the state of things. And you're right, like the Field of Dreams game sponsored by the betting companies. Don't ask us what the plot of Field of Dreams was about.
Right.
They should have put like a burning books thing in there. Was it because isn't that Amy Madigan's whole subplot in that movie?
Oh boy, yeah, that might be. So, as to the Field of Dreams as a movie, where do you stand on it? Because there's a number of people who are pretty much against it, saying, "Look, schmaltzy as it may be, the actual movie sucks." And I'm like, "How can you say that?" I had one guy in our group chat say that. I'm like, "Come on, man. Where are you on this?"
I like Field of Dreams. It is not one of my Hall of Fame. Like, I'm a Bull Durham man. I'm a Major League man.
Nice.
I'm a Sandlot man. I'm a Moneyball man. I like, and I do like Field of Dreams a great deal. Best Picture nominee, Field of Dreams. Wild to remember that. It's a sentimental movie. It's an extremely sentimental movie, but baseball is an extremely sentimental sport. So I think they kind of pair nicely. I don't watch that movie and think to myself, this doesn't mash up. I think it's Costner doing what Costner does best, which is being kind of a boring everyday guy. And I think listen, I'm just a man. I cry at the end of that movie when he says, "Have a catch," even though no one has ever said the sentence "have a catch" in their entire life. That's not how you say "let's play catch" to somebody.
Right.
But, you know, it's a beautiful moment. And now that I am a father, I'm sure it's only going to hit even harder. I think maybe some people's problem is it is a baseball movie with not that much baseball in it. And I think that's a problem that people have with Moneyball too, where Moneyball is not particularly interested in the exciting on-field stuff. The big highlight of that movie is basically spent in the tunnels underneath the stadium. And I think Field of Dreams has that similar thing. So if you're looking for the sports movie, you know, triumph of, you know, a Major League or a Sandlot or something, even a Sandlot or something like that, Field of Dreams doesn't entirely have that. It is not a baseball movie. It's an America movie. It's a Norman Rockwell movie that has baseball as its main colors.
Yeah. Are you aware of this British author, Christopher Booker, and the book he wrote in 2004 called The Seven Basic Plots, Why We Tell Stories?
I've heard of him. I've heard the idea of it. I love the fact that there's an author named Christopher Booker.
Yes.
Feels like a director named Stephen Bill or something.
Right. That's right. So it was a massive 700-page psychological study that argues that all human storytelling is built upon seven universal basic plots and patterns. They are as follows. You ready? Overcoming the monster, rags to riches, the quest, voyage and return, comedy, tragedy, and rebirth. That's it. Seven basic plots. I would say that Field of Dreams is a quest movie, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty, those are some pretty broad categories too. Like, yeah, I love lumping in comedy and tragedy. Like, yeah, that's an entire, yeah, that's a whole plot, you know? But it's not wrong. It's the classic thing of, you know, oh, there's no originality. Yeah, you find different ways to tell stories. You find different modes, different tones, different approaches. You know, there's only so many notes on a piano. There's only so many notes on a violin. It's how you find the different combinations and find the different ways to play it. So yeah, I don't tend to begrudge, per se, something being like, oh, this is just this plot. Well, it's like, yeah, the only person who's probably the only original is Homer, okay?
Yeah. So that said, how is the Odyssey? I keep saying I got to go get a ticket to one of the IMAX theaters in my area, and I've yet to see it, and I know that if I don't get it quick, football's upon us, and I'll never see it. Have you seen it, and how is it?
Oh, I'm a big Odyssey fan. I think it's very, very good. I think Christopher Nolan, I like, as far as spectacle goes, you can't go any better. Like, he filmed the whole entire thing on IMAX. And even if you can't see it on IMAX, it is worth seeing on a big screen. You know, it is a large, very impressive movie with set pieces that you're like, I'm not entirely sure how they got around to doing all of this.
Nice.
And you take things for granted, like filming stuff on boats in the ocean sucks. And there's a reason why one of the most catastrophic, you know, filming things of all time, productions of all time. I love his new approach to the story of finding, you know, a kind of Oppenheimer-y way into this that feels very modern. I think it's tremendous. I think you're going to see it brought up a lot come Oscar time. This might be Matt Damon's Oscar. I mean, we got a lot of time, but it does feel like if you want to give Matt Damon his career achievement Oscar, he kind of puts this movie on his back and does a pretty terrific job with it. I think it's great to chew on. I will say, and this is going to sound like the silliest thing in the world, it takes about an hour and a half for me to really like get into the groove with this movie. Like the first hour, and it sounds very silly to be like, after the first hour, it gets good. But like the first hour is a lot of exposition, a lot of table setting, a lot of figuring out where you're going. And then the second act is all of the Odyssey stuff. And all those set pieces are incredible. I was amazed by how much the third act really hit me in terms of where it was all going and kind of the gut punch that the movie delivers, while also delivering one of the most satisfying finales of a movie I've seen in quite a while. That was like real punch in the air. Hell yeah. This is awesome. It is a very funny kind of have your cake. And I'm trying not to spoil it too much, which is a little silly. The movie came out a month ago.
Sure.
Millennial old story. Spoiler alert. He gets home. But the way it kind of has its cake and eat it in terms of being like, maybe we did Troy wrong, but also we got to kill we got to kill some suitors. We got to kill these guys. Maybe we should have killed all those people in Troy, but these suitors, I got to kill them.
I got to kill. We got to get to killing right now.
And I tell you, he does, and it's great. I would highly recommend one of my favorites of the year so far. Well, I will all say, right. I haven't seen Minions and Monsters yet, so I can't, you know, who knows?
My daughter saw it. She loved it. But she loves every movie she sees, and that's the beautiful thing about her. So
I've heard it's good. It's weird. It's not weird that it's underperforming. Maybe making an ode to silent cinema was a weird choice for a kids movie. Yeah. But I've heard good things about it, and I kind of have a new appreciation for the Minions.
Well, I recently had to see Paw Patrol Dino movie, and she was super jacked up to see that. Loved every bit of it, and I was like, okay.
And how was your nap?
It was a great nap. It was a very expensive $15 nap. But it was still a good one on those seats. By the way, so Matt Damon does not have an Oscar, huh?
He might have a writing one. He might have a screenplay one from Good
Will Hunting. But not for acting. Okay. So he didn't get one for Euro Trip or We Bought a Zoo. I'm trying to think of some of the turd
the
Matt
Great
Damon.
Ball.
Yeah, right. I'm looking at his IMDb and I'm like, you know, he's pretty good at avoiding really, really shitty movies.
Have you seen Suburbicon? Suburbicon is a pretty shitty movie.
Really? Okay. Yeah. I've not seen that one.
That's a Coen Brothers script directed by George Clooney with Matt Damon, Julianne Moore, and Oscar Isaac. And you can tell why the Coen Brothers were like, yeah, we don't want to make this movie because this movie sucks. Sucks bad. And George Clooney is a bad replacement for the Coen Brothers in terms of the director's chair. So, yeah, Matt Damon's got his career is so weird. Like when you go through it, when you trace through the Matt Damon career arc, it's just a lot of weird ebbs and flows. Like,
but
there
he's
was the
been in a lot of good shit, man. And not very many.
Like, the Bourne Identity was not a hit at first. And that was kind of a big kind of gamble on Matt Damon movie star. And then it becomes a big hit on DVD. Yeah. And obviously becomes a, you know, action changing movie for about a decade there.
Yeah. Here's one for you. He was actually in Field of Dreams, according to IMDb, listed as baseball fan at Fenway Park, uncredited. So he was technically in Field of Dreams. Now you've got an Easter egg, boys and girls. Go watch Field of Dreams and see if you can find Matt Damon at Fenway Park.
Do you think he just does that? Do you think he has his agent anytime a movie films in and around Boston and or Fenway Park? Him and Ben Affleck are like, put us in the credits. They'll believe.
We were there. We were there that night. Yeah, socks. Went to Dunkin' that day.
They're just constantly being like, oh, yeah, we were there. Yeah, Boston thing, we were there.
All right, college football coming up. Your wife is a Notre Dame fan. Went to Notre Dame, right?
Yeah.
And Notre Dame plays Wisconsin at Lambeau Field, a really cool wrinkle to the season, September 7th, to kick things off. A, are you going? And B, what are you excited about for college football? Because you're a super college football hardo on the down low.
Yeah, I will start with I am going to the Lambeau Field game. Nice. I'm very excited. Honestly, I will have now seen as many Badger games at Lambeau Field than Packer games.
Wow.
I've only seen one Packers game before, and now I will have seen just as many Badger games. So that's kind of weird. Okay. I'm very excited for it. It'll be interesting, too, because it's very young in the season, so Badgers fans will be kind of excited. Mm-hmm. And the Irish will be, you know, kind of getting some rust off and trying to prove themselves. So it could be an interesting game. And obviously in a setting like that, it should be really fun. Yeah, I'm very excited for that game. I will be wearing Notre Dame colors because A, I'm a Marquette alum, and B, because I like being married and I don't want my child to live in a house of divorce.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of my wife and having my child. So
and I believe they're almost 20-point favorites as well. So, you know.
Yeah. I think this Badgers team has to be better than last year, right? As for what I'm looking forward to in this college football season, I think everyone knows this. I love chaos. I love the underdog. College football desperately wants the same 8 to 12 teams in the conversation every year, and I am the guy who's like, yes, God. Memphis undefeated. North Texas is a contender. Like, that's the kind of stuff that really kind of gets me excited to watch the kind of college football. I don't want to call them Illuminati, but like, you know, the Paul Bombs just like lose their mind over the fact that they're going to have to invite Wake Forest to their big sexy party. Right. Or, you know, and heaven forbid, a Sun Belt school.
But with NIL, with max NIL, max chaos is bound to ensue. And if these guys really open up the playoff to more teams to try to get more of their guys in, SEC, Big Ten, you're opening the door to more chaos. You're going to have these programs nobody thought punching through and wrecking shit for them. It'll be funny as hell to watch.
Yeah, and I will be there. You know, I will be the Elmo in front of the fire, just being like, yes, chaos.
Oh, you and come me. On like chaos. Oh, Elmo, yes.
So I'm excited about that. I'll be honest, the week zero lineup is a travesty.
It's pretty it's weak. Yeah, but this is how some people are. They're like, that's all you got for week zero? Bitch, it's an appetizer. It's week zero. Like, settle down. We're going to have some amazing college football weekends. In fact, there's one weekend that has so many unbelievable clashes that they're calling it Armageddon weekend sometime in October, where if you have a wedding scheduled, God help you, because you're going to miss one of the greatest weekends of the year.
Yeah, I think it's, I want to say it's maybe like November 9th or something like that. I thought I had just seen that earlier today, where it's just like the one weekend where it's like everyone's seasons are going to ride on this weekend. I'm going to make an obvious prediction too. Why is that team here conversation is going to be all about Texas Tech this year. Texas Tech has a really chumpy schedule this year. It's pretty weak sauce. They play Abilene Christian. And I hate being a who'd you play, you know, person. But when you're in a big school, like, or a big conference, this is bound to happen. They play Houston. As of right now, that is the one ranked team on their schedule. And obviously things can change, but I'm not seeing a lot of like intense, tough games on their road. So I think they could be this year's kind of Indiana or Notre Dame, where people are like, yeah, they're undefeated. Why are they here? And it's Texas Tech. It is not you know, a legacy school as much as they wish they could be. So, or as much as they're paying to be, I still think there will be an Indiana-like reluctance to be like, do we have to invite Texas Tech? Because Texas only lost twice. We could invite them instead.
Yeah.
So and it'll then, be, I think Texas Tech will be the kind of whipping boy of this year in terms of people being like, okay, who would you play? November 7th, by the way.
Yep. I'm looking at it right here. Can you see the graphic I've shared with you? November 7th, Oregon, Ohio State, Miami, Notre Dame, Alabama, LSU, Georgia, Ole Miss, and a bunch of others as well. But that is unbelievable.
Yeah, BYU, Utah. Who does game day choose to go to?
Whoever Pat McAfee tells them to go to.
Oregon, Ohio State will be the Fox game. No, they'll go to Alabama, LSU, won't they?
Yeah. All right, Mr. Miller, it's great to reconnect with you. I know you're on a lunch break, and I know you're on a baby break, but God bless you. I'm glad you're doing well, and we're going to be ready for a fun football season and a fun baseball season as well. The playoffs are coming, and we will live or die according to how the fates have written our destiny, good or bad.
Hell yeah. Oh, one thing I am not looking forward to, I just wanted to say this. One thing I'm not looking forward to this college football season, the amount of Pat McAfee music drops that are going to be college game day is, it's got to be at least a dozen, right? One a week for sure. I'm going to have to hear
only that. I don't want to have to see Herb Street and his dogs fawn over McAfee's stupid album. You know, like the album is the album. I talked about this yesterday with Andy Pollin. Shaq put out multiple rap albums. They all sucked. Terry Bradshaw put out multiple albums. Athletes put out albums. It's just, you don't have to suck their dick about it, say it's so great when it's not great.
The ESPN folks doing their like falling in line. Like, Pat McAfee's album is the best thing I've heard since Bruce Springsteen's Nebraska. It is an essential piece of music.
Nobody said that, but it was close. The simping and the sucking up to him was just unseemly. Stop it. You're men. Be men for once and be honest.
All right. Had vibes of a scene when everyone's laughing too hard at Joe Pesci's jokes, and it's got that vibe of people. And Pat McAfee is not saying, "Am I funny like a clown? I make you laugh." Like he is not. Right. He's not telling.
Not unlike The Sopranos, where there is a slow motion scene where Tony looks around the poker room and realizes, "Holy shit, these guys are laughing way too hard at everything, including Paulie Walnuts, the biggest suck up in the crew."
Hey, that's right, boss.
Pretty good, Paulie Walnuts.
Yeah, thank you. All right, Mr. Miller, Man About Film. You can find him on Substack, A Man About Film. Great to connect again, my friend. And Godspeed to you and the wife and the little one. And we will talk to you again soon.
Winning season returns at mybookie.ag, and it's time to get in on the action. First-time players can get started by doubling your first deposit, giving you the firepower, pa-boom, to add excitement to the games you love. College football odds boosts, NFL lock of the week season, and over $500,000 in contest prizes live on-site to make winning this season your best ever with MyBookie. With a historic 18-week schedule offering more action than ever before, you need a sportsbook casino that's reliable, and you won't find a better place than MyBookie. I know you're going to bet this season, so do the smart thing and sign up with MyBookie and use our promo code ZABE. That's Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first ever deposit matched dollar for dollar. That's extra money credited to your account instantly just for using promo code ZABE and making your first deposit today. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie, and when you win, get paid.